Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Mini PC Show, episode 53. My name is DoorToDoorGeek from PodNuts.com, where we're going to talk, we're going to have big talk about little machines. And I'll say little machines of all sizes, including normal size, which is kind of hypocritical, but I live in the U.S., so I have that privilege. I'm joined here by Richard Hughes. How's everything going, man?
Living the life. Couldn't be better. Here at the Hughes Compound Southern Command.
And I was just in your area, quote unquote, a week ago for about 5 days, took the family down to Kissimmee, and I call it Kissimmee to upset the locals there because they say that's not how it's pronounced. And we actually went to Orlando because that's more famous. We went to Disney World, Magic Kingdom, Epcot Center, Hollywood Studios, spent a lot of money. And really tired. We drove down to save money. Well, I told the wife, by the time the kids get of age, college is going to be near pointless unless you want to be a lawyer, doctor, some advanced profession like that.
So did you see the stunt show, the Hollywood action stunt show?
It was down. It was under construction. It looks like they're building two new areas in Hollywood Studios. One of them is Toy Story Land, where it's going to have a Toy Story roller coaster and a bunch of other stuff in there. And a whole wing of Hollywood Studios is being torn down to create a new Star Wars land.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're going to be big sections.
A buddy of mine told me about the Hollywood action whatever stunt studio. And, you know, I went, of course, do you know when I went? I went to Disney the first time 2 years ago, the same week you were there.
Cool.
And it was ungodly hot.
Yes. Yeah. The wife, I think, is finally convinced this time. Next time we go, she's literally tempted to go during Christmas time. Her fear, I'll say, was she didn't want to take the kids out of school, to which I said, who cares?
See, the way to gauge when you want to go is if you look at the blackout schedules for the season passes, like for the yearly tickets. And I've had yearly tickets for like a year or two for Universal. And pretty much the way they make these passes, if you go for more than 2 days, and if you're going, you need to go for more than 2 days, you might as well pay the extra $10 and get the yearly pass.
Right.
And so, you know, a couple of times we're going to be in the area for the weekend or whatever. So I did get the yearly pass for Universal. And, you know, I've enjoyed it. And definitely, you don't want to be in Orlando during the summer. That's just not how to work it.
Yeah, we got lucky, I'll say. The first full day we were there, it rained the whole day, so it was nice and cool, to which I, you know, we're not buying the parkers, we're not covering ourselves, this is rain. When it stops, we're going to dry off in 30 seconds because we're in Florida. Just keep walking around, kids. And short lines on certain rides, come on, let's go have fun.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, by the third day, it heated up, and it was disgusting.
So did you get the wristbands? What'd you do?
Yeah, we all had the wristbands walking around like maroons, tapping stuff with it. The wife, we stayed in the Contemporary, which is one of the resorts right there. You can literally walk from that to the Magic Kingdom in 10 minutes.
Nice.
We had a deck. They messed up our room, so they upgraded our room and they gave us access to some luxury level where you walk in, bottles of liquor sitting out, beer sitting out, wine sitting out, soda sitting out, coffee sitting out, treats sitting out, and if there was something that you wanted and it wasn't there, just ask them and they would go get it for you kind of thing.
Whoa, no charge for that stuff?
No charge at
Dude.
All, which in Disney they charge
Dude,
for everything.
I told you, I'm down the road, call me. What happened?
Well, and then right on the balcony, you could easily walk out and see the castle, Space Mountain, you could see all the high things. And then the fireworks show, you could easily see from there, but they also piped in all the audio that they piped through the park up there. So you basically got a bird's eye view of all the fireworks, and the kids thought that was fantastic.
Very cool.
It was, but the first time I went out there to watch the fireworks in about a minute and a half, I came closest I've ever came to a genuine panic attack. It literally felt like the patio, the deck was at like a 20-degree angle, which I knew it wasn't.
Right.
But it felt like it was at a 20-degree angle and we were going to fall and I was going to die. So I went back inside and I left the kids and wife out there because I knew it was all in my mind.
Wow.
But it came really close to full-blown panic attack thing, so I, you know.
I used to fly on the 4th of July and watch the fireworks from the airplane. And what was cool on Long Island is you would see the fireworks going on all over and like on the Connecticut shore and the whole shooting match. And once when I was returning to the airport, some jokers were sitting at the end of the runway. I'm at 1,000 feet above ground. And I got fireworks coming up past me. They were aiming the frickin' mortars at the plane. And let the tower know, and they sent the cops after him in their helicopter.
Yeah, that's not cool. We do have a quick follow-up email from Jesse Beach I want to go over. He was having issues with Wi-Fi and Ethernet on the Odroid XU4, which I've never experienced any issues using a Wi-Fi, a adapter, or my hardwired NIC. He tried a different OS, or tried reflashing the OS. NIC started working just fine. The Wi-Fi adapter I use, it's like this. I look at setting a bar for these kinds of things, and my logic is, if it works in regular Debian, straight out the box, on x86 platform, with no drivers needed, that's the one I'm going to buy, because it's going to work on every version of Linux without any issue 99.99999% of the time. I don't expect super high throughput on a adapter like that. I expect stability, consistency, and at least usable speed.
All right. How do you know it's going to run without a driver?
Because basically you just boot up to a live Debian session, plug it in, and if Wi-Fi appears,
I got that part. But
works.
When I'm shopping for it, you don't know that.
Oh, no. You don't. Okay. I have tried to do research, and one of the ones, and I'll try to find this link, make sure it's in the note. It was the official Raspberry Pi supported Wi-Fi adapters, and what they really whitelist there is chipsets. So I do remember getting one of those chipset names at basically random, jumping in to Amazon and just searching for that chipset, and then one of the very first ones that popped up I bought, and it turned out to be a here, I have both the links right here in my email, thankfully. I always want to say it's called Mushkin, but it's not. It's called a newish Wi-Fi adapter, mini wireless USB dongle. It's super tiny, super small, lights up, and just works. I don't want to say flawlessly, but it just works everywhere I've ever plugged it in.
Okay, so that's a nub, but it's not a thing with an antenna.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't expect to be able to, you know, take this thing, you know, a quarter mile away and have it work.
So on my up squared, you know, the up squared has two gig Ethernet ports, but it doesn't have Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. And I bought a module. It was an RTL, you know, the chip was like an RTL 8821.
Realtek,
and
yeah.
I thought Realtek just worked everywhere, but I had to add the driver, add the module into it.
Yeah, it's almost like it depends on the year of that Realtek. There are certain models or years or whatever where it just works perfect, but then there's a couple where it is a pain in the butt to get working. I do have the links. They will be in the notes. The other one is to a elinux.org page, RPi USB Wi-Fi adapters, and they have what looks like almost a Wikipedia table or grid. Telling you, is it supported in Debian? Is it supported in Raspbian? Is it supported in other? Works without a hub? Does it offer access point mode? Can you put it in promiscuous mode? Does it support ad hoc network? And it gives you manufacturers, models, and hardware descriptions. The only way I can put it is there's at least in the whole page when you scroll down and it goes through all of them, at least 50 that they go through and mention, and they tell you what kind of support it has and how good it works. This to me was a great jumping off point to picking up the correct piece of hardware first time, every time.
Gotcha. Yeah, I just, because I have on my Google Drive a conf directory, a conf folder, where I put a lot of how I configured things, and in combination with that and some bookmarking tools, I have everything I need to rebuild something, or if I eventually need to go back and say, how did I do that? You know?
Right.
And I have the bookmark for adding the module into the kernel for the Realtek that I got.
Gotcha. The email from Jesse actually says, because I realized I didn't read the actual email, it says, well, guys, I got everything running. Diet Pi is running on the Odroid XU4 and the Wi-Fi A adapter that Dor recommended worked, although obviously not at the speeds of the Ethernet port. I got about 121 megabits down connected and 23 on the high side with the A adapter. I truly believe that's a driver issue, because this very same Wi-Fi adapter, when I load up like Android on, I want to say it was a C2 and the XU4, I'm getting like twice the speed. So I think the adapter is capable of more, but the default Debian driver just doesn't go higher than, and I literally get between 21 and 24, and that's what I always get. He also said, but it should be plenty for most of my needs. Now I have to decide exactly what I'm going to use it. And Walmart had a nice wireless keyboard with a mouse pad built in for $20. It is the Logitech K400. And I will say once again, that is by far my number one go-to home theater PC mini keyboard, even though it's not mini. It is not quite full size, but it's close to full size. It has a nice touchpad with two buttons on the side. The thing I like about it is when you hold the device, like with two hands, the very top corner, there is a mouse button click. So you can use one thumb to drive the mouse pad, the other button to do the...
I heard you say that before, and I haven't seen it. So seeing it makes a difference.
It is difficult to explain. I'll just say, go look at the keyboard, look at the top right, look at the left side, and then you picture holding it with two hands, and it makes it very easy to navigate things with a mouse-like feature.
So my wife mentioned, for whatever reason, my wife was doing Taekwondo for a while, and she took a liking to MMA. And she's like, well, you know, if we had MMA, I'd watch it. And I'm like, I think I can get that with Cody. So,
or just my Plex thing. I got like 100 pay-per-views on my Plex.
Yeah. I'll just piggyback off you then.
Oh, yeah. It's there.
Yeah, and we got Plex on everything, so that'll work.
Yeah, I will say I go in and out of using Plex, but every time I get into it and use it, it just works a little bit better every time.
I've found... I'm running Plex on the Odroid XU4, and I installed it from Diet Pi along with like Sick Rage Couch Potato and Transmission. And the root directory keeps getting filled up. And it seems like, Sick Rage filled it with a bunch of stuff, which I was like, what the heck? Because you have to hunt around to find where the directory is filling up and why to clear it out. And Transmission has a download directory, and I simlinked it to one of the external USB 3.0 drives. And, I thought I cured that problem because Transmission was clogging things up, but Sick Rage seemed to be clogging things up also.
Clogging the root or the boot?
The root or the boot drive. Wait, boot, root, okay. The root drive. Sorry, root drive.
Okay, I'm asking because I seriously first thought you said boot, and it confused me. So it must be running as root and doing something there, so yeah. That's confusing. That's weird. I will have a link in the notes also to that keyboard listed on Amazon. Normal Amazon price is around $25. If you're patient and you wait, or you use a site like Camel, you can get it for just about $20 shipped. And with Camel, you just got to be patient. I don't think I have any other emails in the queue. Rich, was there anything happened in the last week with your mini computing environment that you wanted to talk about?
Couple of things. I got enough to fill up a show just talking about what I've been up to. One of the things in talking with the guys, I had kind of fits and starts with my 3D printer and going through n number of issues with it and resolving them, or kind of getting suggestions and then finding out that wasn't it. I originally had a Raspberry Pi 3 as my Octoprint server. And the Raspberry Pi 3, I don't think it's the best fill in the blank mini PC in the world, I think it's a damn good one. I think it's a darn good staple. That's the ruler everything else should be judged by, in my mind. And don't get me wrong, I've got ones that I consider better. Like I consider the Odroid XU4 better. I consider the Banana Pro better. And you're a Banana Pro guy also, correct?
Oh, yeah. I love the Banana Pro, but I'll say it's good for certain things. Mm-hmm. They all hit their niche. The difference is the Raspberry Pi hits a wider niche only because of its support.
Yes, yeah. And the Banana Pro is running Crash Plan for me, and the only time that thing has ever been down is when I've put it down to, you know, do something, change something on my network here. It's never had an issue with that. Rock solid.
Yeah, I'm running my Banana Pro off of that Rav Power battery that can charge and discharge at the same time. So literally, it's been well over a year, and it hasn't been down.
So if you go uptime on it, it's going to show, you know, 600 days.
If I could remember what the SSH login is, yes.
Okay. So what I found out in chatting with the guys on the other podcast we do, The Makers, is the Octoprint will run on a Pi Zero. I'd originally thought that wasn't the case. So the cool thing is I have a number of Raspberry Pi Zeros. And I threw Octoprint on it. Actually, what am I saying through? I slid the card out and slid the card in to the Pi Zero from the Pi 3.
Yeah, and that's one of the secret sauce features of the Pi 3 that I think is fantastic. Any SD card from any Raspberry Pi 1, Raspberry Pi 2, Raspberry Pi 3, Raspberry Pi Zero, Raspberry Pi 0W, you can take out of any of those devices, stick in any other of those devices, and it will work. You might have to enable or disable Wi-Fi or whatever, but it will work.
Yep. And so the other thing I did is I printed, it's kind of like I want to say G10, the PC board slots into this. They call it a side rack. And the two side racks kind of snap together. There's dovetail connectors. And so the one wasn't exactly the right size. So I redneck engineered this particular Raspberry Pi, like three or four of them that I had. And what I did is I bought a cheap hub and I just soldered the hub. You know, I broke it apart, took it out of the shell, the little hub, and I just soldered the hub to the power ground and the two data wires. So there's four wires to solder on. And the way I figured out which way the wires went is I soldered them wrong the first time.
Yeah. That works. Mm-hmm. Or does it? And that does.
Working. I guess the other way it works. You know, the power and the ground are labeled, but the data lines aren't. So I did like three or four of them like that. And what that gives you is the ability to throw, you know, a full-size USB on it. I think there's four ports. So what I do have, and this is one of the cool things about Octoprint, is you can do time-lapse. So I have a webcam plugged in. I've got Cat5 Ethernet plugged in to a USB port. I also have Wi-Fi plugged in, and I wasn't thinking I was getting good Wi-Fi in the garage, but it looks like I do get decent enough Wi-Fi in the garage. So I don't have to do the power line over Ethernet. I'm keeping it that way, but we'll see what happens.
Gotcha.
So I was very excited to liberate a Pi 3, and what I did with the liberated Pi 3 is for like, I don't know, $7.95, I got another RTL, whatever, the software-defined radio dongle.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm running PiAware, and I got it on like a 20-foot mast on the back of my launch head. And what I did, just kind of as an experiment, there's where the, on the spot of the, it's now called Harborside. It's, you know, kind of a quaint little city-like shops and streets and whatever, but they have two big parking garages there, and you can park on the top floor in the parking garage. So what I did is I drove over there in my truck, and I put the Raspberry Pi, my cigarette lighter powers with the ignition off, and I plugged the Raspberry Pi in, and I put the software-defined radio dongle on the top of the truck. And I was getting a phenomenal amount of aircrafts received. So the PiAware tracks airplanes, the MODIS transponder, and the ADS-B outputs. And I'm like, So the one at my house is about 30 feet above ground. And being like 60 something feet above ground, I'm getting a significant larger amount. Like, I'll see airplanes out to 100 nautical miles away from my house.
Wow.
But they have to be up about 40,000 feet, 35 to 40,000 feet. So it's kind of like a cone in which I can see them.
Because of the flat Earth.
Yeah, you know, and yeah. So now, being up 60 feet, I was getting airplanes out to, you know, out over the Bahamas. I was getting them like 250 nautical miles away. I was really, now what I'm trying to figure, I'm like, if I put a solar panel on this and a battery and like stuck it on top of, you know, the little elevator shaft building there, maybe nobody you know, and connect to the, connect to some open Wi-Fi.
It might take them years to figure it out. Yeah, so this is almost like a line of sight thing, and because Florida is a flatter state, that's very cool.
Yeah, so
very cool. And so you took the Raspberry Pi off of your 3D printer and you replaced it with a Zero. Then you used that Raspberry Pi for this endeavor.
Correct. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because PiAware runs on the 2 and the 3. It doesn't run on the 0.
Oh, too demanding?
I think so. Yeah, you know, the Pi Zero, it's, you got, what is it, 512 megs of RAM, and you got a single CPU, single core.
Right, yeah. I'm going to guess it's a RAM thing, I'm guessing. Just because on a processor, it would just be slower, but still should work. Anything else?
So, what else? I learned you can put PiAware, and there's a couple of web pages with that. I threw that in the notes here. You can put PiAware on an Orange Pi Zero, so I think that's line 462. So
gotcha.
That was pretty cool. I think 461 and 462 are both articles on that. So you can get a super cheap device and have it run.
Yeah, because they're like literally like $10 boards, I believe.
Yeah, if you know, don't get tagged too hard on the shipping from China, you know, that $3-4.
And you don't mind waiting maybe, you know,
4 weeks, 6 weeks.
30 days.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you could build, you know, you got the price of the SD card, which is probably $8. The SDR dongle might be about $8, and the board might be $10 or, you know, $12. So you can build your own, you know, PiAware for, this article says, sub $30 PiAware feeder. So pretty close.
Yeah, so that has 256 or 512 megs of RAM. So RAM isn't the issue. It must be the cores, because the Orange Pi Zero does give you a 4-core board. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to guess it's either. Yeah, so I'm going to guess it isn't the RAM. Then I was completely wrong.
Yep. Yeah, I do have the 512 board.
Very cool. Very cool. The other thing that you and me both have in common was we both got our Pinebooks.
Aha.
I believe. You got yours at least a couple days ahead of mine.
Well, didn't you get yours as you're leaving? Yeah, I did get it towards the beginning of the week. I got it on a Tuesday. It was supposed to be delivered on a Monday. And you got yours just before you left for Disney, right?
Oh, no. I was gone at Disney. The day before I was set to come back, I saw the thing that said it got shipped and delivered. And my mother-in-law, who I will say is fantastic mother-in-law, every day kept coming to the house, picking up the mail.
Oh, good.
And she saw the package and she brought it to her house.
So you're rocking the Pinebook with what OS?
Well, I got the 14-inch Pinebook, and really quick side mention. It comes in a weird plastic attaché-like case.
Is yours thoroughly crushed like mine?
No, mine wasn't close to thoroughly crushed. There was a couple of spots where it broke inside. But it wasn't really bad, just maybe a little piece or two. It is not very eye-pleasing whatsoever, well, that case.
I did a video, and you can see any of my social media stuff at flyingrich.com. Like I said in the video, I hope they got that for free. I hope they didn't pay for that.
Well, I'm sure it was very low cost, because all it was just molded plastic, folded over. But here's my thing. Seeing that, feeling that, looking at that, I literally now want to 3D print myself a similar type attaché, have it look a little bit better material, a little bit better hinge, and then I could also custom design logos on the outside. And then using the stop the print, replace the filament, I could also change the color of it.
Yes.
Mid-print.
I haven't done any of that.
I haven't done any. This is all just pipe dream, man. But I almost want a little carrying case like that just so when I want to bring it, I don't have to bring my backpack. And here's the real reason why that kind of small form factor carrying device can work. The power brick on this thing essentially doesn't exist because you can get a USB to barrel adapter, and that's what I got. And it's literally a 6-foot cord, mm-hmm. and there's no brick involved at all.
Oh, see, I didn't mention this. They sent me the Euro brick, and whoever was replying to the emails, maybe they just weren't very good at English. They're like, yeah, you can order a new one. I'm like, no. The prong thingy just slots into the wall wart. All you got to do is send me a new prong thingy, you know. And they're like, yeah, order a new one. I'm like, oh,
yeah. I'm sure that would charge the device faster, but I don't care. It's literally like an 8-inch cord or something. It's so short.
Well, I ended up getting another wall wart at Amazon. You know, the exact right thing.
Right. Yeah. I knew from all my previous Kickstarter, Indiegogo, Alpha-type purchases I made in the past, every time you get a wall wart from one of these guys, it's literally like a foot and a half cord. So to me, it's utterly useless, and I knew it was going to be useless, which is why I bought the 6-foot USB to barrel cord that they offered. So I'm sure the charging is much, much slower with that cable, but I'm okay with that because my battery life so far is easy 6 hours.
Okay, good, because I really haven't run it off the wire too much. And one of the questions I have for you, so is your printer big enough to print a case for this?
My printer can do 12 by 12 by 15, so yes.
15 vertical, right?
Yeah.
12 by 12. Yeah, I guess so, huh?
I don't know. I got to sit down, because the millimeter to inch thing still confuses me. And I'll say my first impression about the device is, yes, it's plastic. Of course it's all plastic. I had a guy at work today ask me when I told him it's, you know, a $90 laptop. He said, well, is it aluminum? It's $90. What do you expect? What's wrong with you? So yes, of course it's all plastic. But I'm going to tell you right now, build quality for it being 90 blows me away. This is phenomenal good. It blows the Pi Top out of the water.
Wasn't the Pi Top $300?
The Pi Top was $300 friggin' dollars.
I was hoping I was wrong.
And no, you were right. It was $290 or whatever. That keyboard on it was one of the worst keyboards I've ever witnessed in my life. They had the touchpad on the side, and it was a small touchpad, and it was usable, but it was a touch weird. Granted, you could put a real Pi in it, mm-hmm. okay? So that made it much better. But the first thing I did when I got this, I purchased the eMMC upgrade up to 32 gigs. I didn't get the 64 gig. I got the 32 gig.
I don't even know what mine comes with.
16 is the default.
I guess that's what I have.
So the first thing I did was unscrew the 10 screws, pop off the bottom, pull back the tape with the little heating element on it, and pop out the eMMC, put the new one in, put everything together, and everything just worked. I was really thinking it wasn't going to work because, you know, it's me. So I had to do it myself.
So you got a 16 gig eMMC kicking around?
I have it upstairs.
Will that plug into your Odroid?
No reason why not. No reason at all. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. The real quickie is, though, but that gave me also the idea. I'm literally tempted, even if I can't print the whole size in my 3D printer, I know I can technically print two pieces and then just join them together with acetone, I believe.
Acetone?
I'm literally tempted to print a custom bottom to this and have a door on the side right here so I can pop it like the old RAM door, right. So I can pop the eMMCs in and out and not have to take out all the screws and pop it. So that was just an idea I was throwing around. The keyboard on this thing, I got to say, again, for $90, phenomenal. It's not a great keyboard. It works good, not fantastic. But for $90, I think it's unbelievably good.
So here's where I sit, you know, is it 90 or 100? I think I paid 100 might because I got the wall wart.
It depends on what you get. It starts out with $80, $79 for the 11-inch model, $89 for the 14-inch model, and then, yeah, once you get the wall wart, it pushes it up to, I believe, like $95 or $98.
Yeah, I think I was close to $100, and it was like $30 shipping. And the way I see it is, if I got something that looks relatively nice, and I think this looks fairly sexy,
mm-hmm.
for $100, if it turns on, it gets warm, I'm pretty good with it.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think the worst feature is on it?
Well, I'll say another really quick best thing. They gave us stickers. They didn't have the stickers on. They let us decide if we want them on or not. I love that. Worst feature, placement of the power button.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I keep hitting shift and going to hit delete, and I keep hitting the power button.
Oh, you know what it is? Because I have a MacBook Pro. I'm used to that.
Ah, gotcha. Me not. I don't like the half height arrow keys. It's not a killer kind of thing, but I'm not a fan of that. There's no separate page up, page down keys.
Okay, page up,
there's
page down, I'm not quite happy about. But I'll tell you what, you seem to have a lot of quips about the keyboard. I'm okay with the keyboard.
Well, I'll say those are the only things that I don't like, but this is one of the things I like about laptops. I hate when they have numpads, and then the keyboard and the trackpad are off-center.
Yes.
I despise that. It just drives me nuts. And this is centered, mm-hmm. so I take those lackings of the half-height keys, no page up, page down, dedicated keys, and I wipe them away. I'm okay with it. And when I type, 99% of the way I'm typing, it's not missing keys, and it's just working fine.
Okay.
Because I was afraid it was going to, like, miss keys every now and then. Worst feature, the fact that you can plug the power into the headphone jack.
I won't say I did that, but yes, you can.
I did. And my son said, well, of course it ain't working, Dad. That plug has a little headphone thing on it. Oh, Jesus. My son noticed it.
Now, do you know if the headphone has a speaker jack on it also? Or is it just headphone?
I honestly believe it's a 2-ring jack, not a 3-ring. I don't think you can do a headphone.
Microphone.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't think you can do them. Like, I haven't tested it yet. I do have a headset I could test it with.
So,
And I'm really trying to think. One of the complaints I heard, which I understand but I don't experience, is that it's almost a little bit too lid heavy. So if you push it back and it's on a flat table, it might wobble and like want to go flip over. But I haven't really experienced that.
Oh, I haven't experienced that either.
The screen isn't a high res. Maybe that's a downside.
Really?
But, I mean, for $100,
it's pretty darn sharp.
Oh, I know it looks good, but I also know it's not 2K or whatever.
Maybe my eyes are just so bad. I don't know. I got a MacBook Pro Retina 15-inch, and I'd say the screen is, you know, close, pretty damn close to quality on that. Now, what off-angle viewing is really bad.
Yes, that I will agree. But honestly, I almost appreciate that.
Right, and I don't necessarily count that as a negative. I don't want to sound too much of a fanboy on this because this is like, would I buy one for another member of the family? I'd be like, I don't know.
I wouldn't if I left the original default operating system on it, which was Android. I don't think I would.
Wait, you had Android on yours?
My default OS was Android on my EMMC.
Oh, mine was Ubuntu something.
Oh, maybe I had a chance to pick it and I didn't.
Mm-mm.
I don't know.
No.
Okay, well, here's the real quick lessons learned with this thing. Installing an operating system is a little bit different than everything else you've ever done in your life on anything. Okay, anything. It's almost a daisy chain has to be done unless you want to pop the back, pop the EMMC out, buy a adapter, plug it up to USB and flash it that way. The way you're supposed to flash this device, now on every version of every OS built for this device, you can go into, and I want to thank Aaron on the Mattermost server for setting me straight on this. You can go into the user local sbin folder, and there's about 10 to 12 script files, which are very helpful and very useful, and everyone should know about them, and everyone should explore them, and everyone should look at the names of them and see what they do, because there's going to be a time when you're going to need them. One of them is like to update the kernel. One of them is to fix the like master boot type thing on it.
Killing me.
Another one is to take the boot sequence off of your SD card, to not use it as a bootable SD card, just use it as a regular SD card. Because it will always first boot to the micro SD card if it's in the drive. And then another one is to install an operating system to the EMMC. So what you do, this is the way I do it. You first go to their website. You go to pine64.org. You go to Pinebook. You go to resources. You go to software. You go to download, and you download one of their SD cards image. It doesn't matter what image it is. It can be Android. It can be Ubuntu Mate, Ubuntu i3, Ubuntu, I believe, Minimal or Headless, I believe. Any of them. It does not matter. Burn it to an SD card, especially using their tool Etcher. They have an Etcher tool, Richard, so I did use Etcher. And they supply it via a app image download, which I like a lot because that means I don't have to install Flash. Flash is baked into that app image. Put it on the device, put in the SD card, bing, bang, boom, whatever seconds later, SD card done. Put it in the device. It always first boots the SD card. It boots up. Now, the gimmick is you have to have a network connection. There's no Ethernet port on this, so you've got to configure Wi-Fi, connect via Wi-Fi, open up a terminal, go to that folder, which is /local/sbin, and you'll see all the script files. Then you have to basically, as root, which is, you can either type sudo space dot slash pine64_install_2_emmc.sh space. Then you have to type in one of the options, which if you don't type anything and just hit enter, you'll see the options. And then it will install, but it always wants to download. That's why you need a network connection. And then it will install whatever to the eMMC card. That's how you can basically, on the fly, change your operating systems. I don't know of a way to pre-download these OSs and install from a local source instead of the internet, because that's what I would like to do. Because my logic is to have a 32 gig card with all the OSs on it, and then when you want to change OSs, you just boot to that one card, install from that local SD card. Should be much quicker, much easier, much faster. So what I did was I installed Ubuntu Mate, and then I installed the i3 desktop manager, or I'm sorry, window manager, just because it's unbelievably snappy. I logged into that. I did a lot of configuring. I got a lot of what I wanted up and running, except it was not reading the battery correctly. I cannot get an accurate battery monitor in i3. So I'm using Mate until I get that figured out.
Latte.
Yeah, we live in America. It's Mate. and it works fine. It is not super snappy. It is not super fast. It is a $100 worth of speed, which is perfectly fine for my use case, which is check emails, check my Mattermost, which is like IRC, check my IRC, check my MeWe, social network thing. And you know, that's it. I'm not doing heavy editing of anything in the web browser. I'm not loading any crazy applications, but I will also say this is the device, Rich, that's probably going to make me finally break down and buy the Exagear, I believe it was called, application, which is like $20. You put it on a ARM-based computer and it will allow you to emulate 32 and 64 bit applications.
You mean Intel applications?
Yeah, like 32-bit and 64-bit x86 or x64 applications.
You know, it's funny. I saw that recently, and I meant to mention it to you.
Yeah, it costs money. I'm going to end up buying it probably now just because of this device. Because, like, I tried to run a Cura 3D slicer on this, but because it's an ARM processor, it doesn't work. So I'm tempted now to buy that application. It's only, I think, $25.
I thought it was less.
And then, look, I know it isn't much. That's what I'll say.
I don't think it's a straight out pay once. And I thought there was a lesser. Anyhow, go to the site, figure it out.
Yeah. I'm getting at least 6 hours of battery. I had it at work all day today, eight plus hours at my desk. Periodically closing it, letting it go into standby, hibernation, which I despise on all equipment. I never use hibernation, suspend it ever, because I don't trust it. But I said, I'll do it for this time, for this first day I'm using it, because it was just today. Close the lid, walk away, go downstairs, talk to this person, get this thing figured out, talk to that person, point them in the right direction, come back upstairs, open the lid, enable, and I was manually disabling Wi-Fi before going into hibernation and then enabling it when I opened it back up.
Mm-hmm.
Logging in. At the end of the day, I was still just over 50% battery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was very, very pleased with the battery.
So it's not like you watched videos for 6 hours. You know,
nope.
I would say normal technical use, not entertainment use.
Yes. Now, I do plan on spending at least one night here with a headphone plugged in, because I'll tell you now, you want a complaint? The speaker.
Yes.
Horrible. And very low.
Yeah, So that was really my first big complaint, and mine came with Ubuntu on it, but the mouse click was like 2.5 seconds later. Like, you click something on the screen, and then 2.5 seconds later, something would happen.
Wow.
So I switched over to Android. So it's very funny that we both had the opposite and switched. So I'm on Android 6 with it. And
all right.
So my purpose for this, and I for people that listen to me on this podcast, other podcasts will have heard me say this many times, is that it's like, G-Dor, I think I want a refreshed netbook. I think that's what I want. That's going to help me. That's going to serve a lot of purpose.
Let me guess. And then you get this, and then you don't use it like a netbook.
Well, no, and it's funny. Oh, I'm using it exactly the way I wanted to.
Good.
So, what? And there's a couple of dumb stories here with use case. I don't use my desktop anymore. I use my MacBook Pro with a side dock cable organizer that I printed, and that plugs into two other monitors and hard drives and stuff like that, and network. And so really the MacBook Pro is now my desktop. So if I leave it in my office, I'm happy. That my MacBook Pro was supposed to be liberated from my office because of the Upboard Squared was going to be my thin client that plugged into two monitors, but I can't get it to work on two monitors because one's a DisplayPort and I don't have DisplayPort monitors, and I haven't been able to figure that one out yet. So my use case for the Pinebook is email, YouTube, Plex, and Netflix. And I haven't tried it with Amazon Video yet, but it does good on these things. It's unbelievably quiet. So if I walked around in the house and somebody had the TV on, or if there were two people talking, if my wife and daughter were talking and I was walking around with this playing audio, whether it was the radio or a movie or something, I absolutely am certain I would not be able to hear it. But what I typically do, I really don't watch video. I listen to video. And I can't sleep unless there's something, some noise in the background. So what I do is I'll put on a series that I thoroughly know every episode, so I don't have to watch it. I'm not compelled to watch it. And I'll fall asleep to it. So I'm pretty happy with that. So it's working. The Plex app works. The YouTube app works. The Netflix app works. Oh, Netflix app has to be sideloaded. And I found a website. I forgot. It was like all the APKs or something like that. And the reason it has to be sideloaded is because this is a rooted device. And rooted devices, you can also muck with where they think they're located. So you can get content in the U.S. that you're not supposed to have, or vice versa, if you have a rooted device. So at first I was like, hey, Netflix doesn't work on here. What's going on? You know, it says it's not for this device, and then I read up on it. So I sideloaded it, boom, works. So I'm happy with that. The only thing that happens to me, and you tell me if it happens in Ubuntu, is after it hibernates, when it wakes, there's no audio. You got to reboot.
No, seems to work fine.
Hmm.
I will say, are you connecting via Bluetooth, or have you tried to connect anything via Bluetooth?
No, not yet.
Okay, I did try to connect my One Voice wireless earbuds to it, and as soon as it paired, the Bluetooth manager, like, force quitted, disappeared. So then I launched it again, and I could not get the Bluetooth to pair with my headphone, which I'll say, on a lot of other devices with Linux, I've had issues getting those headphones to connect. And then on certain devices, it just works perfectly.
Oh, man, you just made me realize I have an iHome that I think is Bluetooth. I think.
Gotcha.
And that's my clock on my nightstand, and I could iHome connect it, whatever, Bluetooth connect it.
Right. Yeah, because, yeah, the speaker is really... You say two people talking. I'll say the dishwasher could
absolutely
be on. And there's no way you'll hear it.
No, and even with a quiet dishwasher.
Yeah, or a dog could be snoring and you're not going to hear it. I mean, it's just, it is that low.
And I think they did some things so well. And don't get me wrong, it's absolutely worth every bit of $100. The plastic, if you squeeze it, you can feel it flex, that it's made out of. And the keys don't feel... the keyboard layout is very much the same. I have a 2012 MacBook Pro, and it's very much identical to that. But it does have a backspace and a delete key.
Yeah. Here's another complaint I don't have. There are no hardware brightness controls.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The thing, because in my bedroom, like I said, I don't even watch the screen. I just want some noise in the background to go to sleep to. And I want to dim it. And I'm like, oh, where's the, huh? I'm guessing the F2, it's showing a mouse. I'm assuming that's for the trackpad.
Yeah.
You got play, pause, fast forward, blah.
Well, and you have home, which is never a function key on any device. There's like one or two keys that aren't normal, and they replace brightnesses. And a lot of times, function and up or down is brightness, and here it's page up, page down.
Oh, is that it? Thank you.
Yeah. So you can page up, page down. You just got to hit the function key. So what I'm thinking is I'm gonna have to do some like macro key binding to a brightness command in Linux, because there are times I do want the volume, the actual brightness, mm-hmm. turned down, mm-hmm. and I don't want it bright.
Right.
Partially for battery savings, partially just because I might not be in a bright area. And here's the other thing. I'm honestly toying with the idea, Rich. Something tells me if these people can get enough of these things out the door quick enough, which it seems like a lot of companies are having this exact same problem, but if they can get enough of these things out the door in a quick enough fashion, I can see almost a modder community start building up around this thing, buying it for $100 and then modding it to make it better. Because I can see A, taking off the back of this panel, putting in the door so I can take the MMC in and out whenever I want. I can see customizing the batteries of the speakers, putting in a different set of speakers to get better performance out of it. I could see, and to be honest, I don't see any reason why I couldn't basically take this thing, rip out that board, pull off a Banana Pi Pro or a Raspberry Pi 3 or an Odroid C2 or something, desolder all of the pieces off of it, like the NIC and the USB ports, and put it in this case. I don't see a reason why you couldn't. I don't know. I'm just saying.
See, I agree with you. I think it's a fantastic host. If you could separate out, and I'm assuming, because I haven't cracked it open, I did see a video, and it looked like there's only one board in there. Is that correct?
No, there's two. The daughter board over on the left side is just a board for the USB, because you have both sides, you have USB mm-hmm. boards. On one of the sides, it's just a little board connected to it with the host controller on it. So the other board is not anything in particular.
So does the main board drive the display also?
I did not see an inverter, so I'm going to say yes. But there is a big physical square-inch size battery. It could be underneath that. The battery is literally, I'd say, easy 2x4 inches. Mm-hmm. It's big, so it could be tucked up underneath there for all I know. And honestly, I hate something like this. Seeing this in action, opening it up, seeing the bottom of it, gives me a little bit more self-determination and empowerment, thinking I might be able to actually do something like this with my own boards. Mm-hmm. Actually have a Banana Pro in there with an actual genuine SATA port on it, or have one with a Odroid on it with an actual IR blaster receiver on it, kind of thing. Just doing different things. I don't know. We'll see how it happens. One thing I don't like is I don't see enough activity on their forums for my liking. Mm. I don't see enough people posting their personal configurations, how they got this working, what a problem was they had, kind of thing. I'm seeing very random postings.
Gotcha. Well, one of the things I'm as far as popularity goes, my nephew, who's more of a technophile as opposed to a techie, he knew of the Pinebook.
Huh.
So I was kind of surprised about that. One of the things, if you look at it, it opens maybe 100 degrees or so. It doesn't open much further. So if you want to, lay it back, it's that doesn't happen.
Right.
One of the things, because the form factor, I guess I'm used to touching Android. Occasionally I touch the screen. I'm like, oh, yeah, it doesn't do that. And the thing, if any of you guys get this and run the Android OS, it says swipe to unlock. There is no swipe to unlock. Even though the text on the screen says swipe to unlock, it's called a space bar. The space bar. Yeah. I couldn't tell you how long I was like swiping. I'm like, hold would swipe. Don't hold and swipe. You know, couldn't figure it out. And then I guess I hit the space bar. It's just randomly hitting keys.
Yeah, I only know of it because one of my previous devices was like that. And because it wasn't a touch screen, and I'm sitting there on the touchpad just thinking, I'm just doing it wrong. Maybe it's two fingers. Maybe it's two. Yeah. And no, nothing was working. So I'll say this. As a general consumption device, it's like a C, C plus maybe. But for a $100 device, it's definitely an A. It's really hard, in my opinion, to get more bang for the buck.
In the video I did, I had a stack of, you know, whether it was tablets or laptops and whatever. In the cheapest one in the stack was the netbook I had, the MSI Win netbook. And I forget if that was like $350, $400 or something like that. I mean, so I'm no matter what I'm doing, I'm still comparing it to the cheapest item in the lot. Is four times the price.
Right. Yeah, and what I'll say, if you just go on any of these websites and just try to buy a 14-inch screen, you're going to pay more than $100, period. I don't care where you go. The biggest ripoff in custom mini computer builds, the biggest expenditure is going to be the screen. Like in the desktop computer, it's supposed to be your video card or the processor. Well, in mini computers, it's always going to be the screen unless you literally get like a 3.5-inch screen.
Well, and that's, I still don't understand how they deliver a product for $100.
They stole it? I don't know. They stole the screens from somebody? I don't know, because I don't know how they do it. And I'll say there is one really quick connected thing I just want to mention, and it's almost, it's one of those happy, disappointed combination things. Line 478 in the notes, right by the very bottom. In 3 days from now, or 4 days from now, Pine 64 are going to launch another board.
And it doesn't
Part of
fit.
Me wants to just tell them to just slow down, focus on what you got, make production steady, make the software better, make the drivers better, make the experience better, focus on making stuff better. But I kind of like this board, Richard. I'm not going to lie. It is a Raspberry Pi form factor, credit card sized board, because the original Pine 64 was definitely bigger than the Raspberry Pi. And then they had the little small one that was the size of a stamp. Then they had the Pine Book. Now they're going back to the Raspberry sized model, where it has a RK3328 64-bit quad core A53 CPU. You can get 1, 2, or 4 gigs of RAM. That right there is desirable. Has the typical eMMC socket, just like their other devices. Has a 3.5 barrel power jack. Comes because of a reason. Has a 128 megabyte SPI flash, which I have no idea what the hell that is. It has a 4K 60p HDR digital output, HDMI. AV jack, gigabit NIC, two USB 2.0, one USB 3.0 full-size port. It has a P5 and a P2 bus. That's the Pi 40-pin board, and then it has a smaller one, which is, I want to say, around 24-pin board. A power button, a reset button, a IR port, a micro SD card slot so you can boot from the eMMC or the SD card. It has the eMMC jumper to pick what you're booting from. And then it has a recovery button. I have no idea what a recovery button is, but I like the idea of playing with something till it breaks and then pressing a button and having it go back, which I'm going to guess that's what it is, because I don't know why else it would be called recovery button if it doesn't do that. Hmm. And as far as I know, no announced price.
All right, so I don't see a picture like showing the end connectors, in a profile. I see the top-down view. So if it's got two USB 2.0 and one USB 3.0, that sounds like it's got three connectors instead of the four like a Pi does.
Right. What it looks like is on the board where the Raspberry Pi has a NIC next to it, two USB next to it, two more USB. This one has the NIC next to it, two USB 2.0, and then next to it, one USB 3.
Right.
That's what sounds like. And this is the only view of the board I've been able to find. So everything's on the top except for the SD card, which is on the bottom.
So this has a couple of things that I just really, really, really consider killer. And the eMMC, if you haven't driven eMMC, you have no idea what you're missing. So this has three things. So the eMMC, I'm not sure what the 128 meg SPI flash is, if that's, you know, writable. I'm assuming it is. So eMMC, gig Ethernet, and USB 3.0. That's like a giant killer as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and the processor, if I'm not mistaken, was a quad-core...
A53.
Yeah, A53, but I can't remember what... I want to say it was 1.5...
Oh, the speed?
...gigahertz. Yeah. Looking at it here, looking at the Wikipedia page.
It's funny, it gives the megahertz of the RAM.
Yeah, I can't. I know I saw it. It was respectable. It wasn't crazy. It wasn't like 2.8. I want to say it was 1.5.
And we're probably not going to have time to talk about it. Not that it's worth going into either. But somebody posted a video of like the top boards of 2017, and the Tinker board was one of them. I'm like, really? Really? You know, the upboard, I don't know if either upboard was on it or not. You know, there are a couple of things I'm like, really? This is the 0W was on there, right. Which, you know, the connectivity on the 0, I don't think they should have came out with the original 0 first. The 0W is really what they should have hit it with. Now, if they put a quad core on the 0W, then we're talking.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if they're ever going to do that. I do expect, literally, I think they're overdue for a rev. Mm-hmm. On that, they need to do a rev on that, and do the rev on the Pi 3. You know, because other things are starting to become much more powerful than it.
Yeah, because this, I'm like, what couldn't you do with this? 4 gigs of RAM, gig Ethernet, eMMC, USB 3.0. And for all practicalities, again, I haven't metered this out, but SATA versus USB 3.0, I don't think you're going to know. I don't think you would ever know the difference. I just know from, you know, daily driving, not from the metrics.
Right. Yeah, and I want to say they already had planned Android and a Debian to be on it, which, of course, those are the first two. It seems like always come out for these things. I'm a little cautious because they're going to have to start making money somehow. So I'm going to honestly expect this board to be a $40-plus board, maybe $50-plus board, but we're not going to know for a couple of days. I've been looking. I can't find the price anywhere.
It says available 1st of July, 2017.
Yeah. So soon, not yet, almost like Spaceballs, you click the link and for where it says that, and it does nothing. So it's just waiting to become a real boy kind of thing. Yeah, so I'm going to keep my eye out on this. I'm just a fan of Pine. Pine and Chip are the two companies I almost want to back. I believe they're both doing really good things. They do have other boards. If you go to their store on the very top, they do have a couple other boards that we've never mentioned. I don't know how successful they are, but I hope this one does get some success because everybody likes USB 3.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Dor, what was the other kind of Pinebook type device you have?
The Pi Top?
Not the Pi Top. Joel got one. I think Dan and Joel have one.
The Jide Ultra Remix tablet.
So how much was that?
$290.
And how big was it? Was it 14 inch or what was it?
I want to say 10 inch, maybe 11 inch.
Wow. And how do you compare this to that?
Well, that had a Microsoft Surface 2 clone everything. Keyboard, case, everything. The keyboard on that was fantastic. Unbelievably great to type on. The touchpad was a little weird because it was cloth kind of thing. Yeah. It was a little funky, a little weird. It was unbelievably top-heavy because the keyboard was nothing. There was nothing to it. But it had that little like punch-out kickstand going across the back, which I thought was nice. That thing has silly battery life, like easy 12-plus hours battery life, which is the thing that I loved about that thing. It was running a Tegra, NVIDIA Tegra K1, I believe, processor, which made everything on that device just fly like butter. There was no alternate operating systems to put on it, which I didn't like. It only had that one Android, and it's never going to be upgraded, so says the manufacturer, because NVIDIA stopped giving them updated drivers for newer versions of Android.
Oh, man.
So except for that, I thought it was a fantastic device, and I still use it. It's still great. I love it. With, you know, a 12-plus hour battery life, it's hard to not like it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was $300, so that's the downside. Yeah, I definitely thought it was a good device, great device for the time, but now I would not recommend people go out and buy it unless you really do like, slightly older Androids, what I'm going to say, not brand spanking new Android. But it does work just fine. No active exploits in the wild for it kind of thing. I just think it's a really good device, just to a little bit too much. If you could find one used for $100, $150, I say jump on it. Okay, do you have any more topics you want to talk about?
No, this is one of those shows where I really haven't looked at the list.
Yeah, it's been a weird couple weeks.
Hmm. Oh, probably just a public service notice. There's a Linux malware infecting Raspberry Pi devices. So you will want to do an update on your board.
Well, you can, but it's pointless. Why? 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 If anybody's stupid enough to put a Bitcoin miner on your Raspberry Pi...
I don't know what kind of miner they're putting on it, but...
It doesn't matter what kind of miner they put on. It's useless. You would have to infect a billion Pi devices in order to get any Bitcoins out of the damn thing.
Pretty much.
It has to be just a proof of concept kind of thing. That once they launched it and once it worked, they just, okay, so we did it. Let's move on. People are panicking about this, to me, to be honest, too much. But I do hope it's bringing out the actual problem, which is that the default Raspbian operating system lets you leave the default username password after first boot. And I do not like that whatsoever. I think that's unbelievably poor of them to do. And they've had plenty of time to fix it. They've had plenty of time on first boot to pop something up and ask you to change your password. That's all it would take. Yep. And then at first boot, it would say, do you want SSH enabled? If you are not sure what it is or do not need it, click this button. For a future thing, if you want to re-enable it, just run this. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. I love people screaming that this is some kind of big deal. To me, this is useless, pointless thing, but I hope it makes Raspbian finally get their act together and either force the changing of passwords or have it disabled. You have to open up a port on your router. My logic is anybody stupid enough to not change the password,
right,
is not smart enough to open a port on their router. I don't think the Venn diagram meets anywhere where the people that leave it default open the port. So the actual likelihood of even 3 infections worldwide, I think, is unbelievably uncommon. If it hits 5 infections worldwide, I would literally eat a hat.
A Podnuts hat?
Any hat. Well, not any hat, but yeah. I just thought that was, I just loved people overreacting to that. Because once you hear, Bitcoin and stuff like this, people, I think, just take a little bit too far. What did we have that in the notes? I couldn't find the line.
Oh, yeah, I read it out of, and I scrolled way past now.
Sorry. I know it was newer news versus older news.
462.
Uh-huh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's good to know about, it's good to be aware of it kind of thing, but to me this is like pointing out that, yes, a asteroid is going to go by the Earth, but it's not going to hit it, it's not going to hit any satellites, it's not going to do anything, but, you know, it's going to come by. So if you want to wave at it, you can. That, to me, is about the extent of this being newsworthy information, unless, of course, it gets Razzing people to change their tune. I didn't really have anything else. I think next week we're going to be link heavy is what I want to say. So is that it, Rich?
Yep, I'm good. And okay. If you want to go see a video about the Pine Book, kind of my first impressions and the mock unboxing, you can go to flyingrich.com and look at my videos.
Very cool, very cool. We hopefully will have Brian back again next week. Brian is a hardworking man, working late, on call, family man. He, when he has time, he comes here. When he doesn't, he doesn't. And I definitely wanted to enjoy to talk to him again next week. And I thank everyone for downloading. I thank everyone who can afford to go to patreon.com/podnuts. And if you cannot afford to go to patreon.com/podnuts, then this is why I'm waiting until the end of the show. Then don't go there. Don't worry about it. Don't stress. You have bigger things to worry about. If you can afford it, it will be greatly appreciated if you can go. Just donate $1 a month. That's all we're really asking for. We're just trying to recoup losses from losing our Amazon affiliate payments. And any help would be greatly appreciated. And with that, we will talk to everyone in about a week.
Hi, this is Matt, the host of the MRP Tech Podcast. I would like to invite you to listen to my show over at podnuts.com. In each episode, I discuss anything tech-related, including Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, Android, Chrome OS, and so much more. We even get into rocket science. I hope you're enjoying all the great content here on the network, and stay tuned for all the great upcoming episodes by subscribing to our RSS feeds.